Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700.
Welcome to Your Wealth Hour, Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700 AM with your host,
Karen Cassino,
and myself, Ryan White. Now, I made these two guys promise they were going to spice it up today, right? We have two civil litigation attorneys with us today, and it's going to be we're going to laugh?
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. Okay, perfect. I have Bradley Jacobs. He is a civil litigation and small business attorney. He is with Bradley Jacobs, attorney at law, and his website is attorneybradjacobs.com. Also, I have Julian McMillan, civil and bankruptcy attorney, McMillan Law Group. His website is McMillanLawGroup.com.
Thank you, Ryan. It's great to be here.
Well, good to have you too. We are going to talk about small business survival. And you guys have put together, I'll call it a handbook, a pamphlet, an e-flyer on how to survive, some of the pros and cons of running a small business. And, well, frankly, I would think a lot of this is to avoid getting in deep with an attorney, right?
Well, yes and no. You know, what you want to do is you want to use an attorney to help you. And you don't want to see that attorney once you've got a problem. You want to get him on the front end. And as a small business owner, you want to have that attorney on your speed dial, if you will, and on one of your favorites, because he should be one of your favorites. They should be somebody that you can talk to about anything that comes up in your business. And this is mostly geared towards a small business owner. And by small business owner, I'm talking about somebody who has a business with maybe 5, 10, 15, even 20 people. Somebody who doesn't have a full-time lawyer on staff, but you want to feel like you do, and you want to develop that relationship. So that's what I'm talking about, Ryan.
Got it. So you're describing a small business based on the number of employees.
Well, based on the number of employees and kind of based on what you have for help in your business. I mean, most business owners don't want to talk about a lawyer. They don't want to pay a lawyer. They just want to have their business run smoothly. And a good business lawyer should know how to help and then how to get out of the way of the people running their business. And, you know, you want a business lawyer to help you with employees and hiring them and figuring out what kind of agreements you should have with them. Whether you want an arbitration provision, whether you want a lease with your landlord and what it should say. Various questions that come up every day, and a lot of business owners don't know that there's an attorney out there who can help them.
We're talking with attorney Brad Jacobs. His website, attorneybradjacobs.com. That's the website, attorneybradjacobs.com. He's given us practical advice for small business survival. And well, he just defined what small business means, and that's not to say that you have to be particularly that size, but I think really what you boil down to is someone who doesn't have an attorney on staff.
Exactly. Right?
That's what it came down to. It doesn't matter how big, what the gross is, how many employees, you don't have an attorney on staff. That's kind of what we're after.
That's what you're after, and what you want to try to develop is a relationship with an attorney so he feels like he's on staff, but you don't have to pay him every month on payroll.
Nice. I can see how that would be a benefit.
I was a person that worked for another company and decided to start my own company. And I know from the beginning of starting my own company, there were so many things that needed to be done properly, and I needed an attorney. Tell me some of the things that are important that you get right just at the beginning of starting your small business.
Well, first, Karen, you're a brave person to go out on your own and start your own business. And I got to tell you, you know, owning my own business as Julian does, as Karen does, and Ryan's in business, you know, these are the people that are really, you know, politicians say they're heroes. They really are heroes because these are the people that are employing most of the people in this country, small business owners. And really, everybody should help them, not only to help yourself. Obviously, it gives us business as lawyers, but to help these people succeed. And you can help yourself succeed as a small business owner by recognizing that if you're going to go out on your own, you need help. You need help from your family. You might need help from a bank. But you really need help from a professional, a lawyer, because there's questions from the very first day you start that business. about how you're going to operate it. Are you going to be a corporation? Are you going to be a partnership? Are you going to run it by yourself? Where's it going to be out of? Are you going to run it out of your house? Are you going to run it out of an office where you've got a lease space? Are you going to have employees? Are you going to have independent contractors? All of these things are going to come up right off the bat. And while none of them maybe are fatal to your business, you can really set yourself up for success, which is what you want to do when you start your business. You want to have everything go in your direction. And some time and a little money spent with the right lawyer in the very beginning can help you get off to the right start, just as you did, Karen.
And we haven't introduced Mr. McMillan yet. And so we're hearing some of the things that you do in the beginning to successfully start and hopefully set your business up for success. I know that you help with that too, but you also, we're going to talk with you in detail later about what happens when things go wrong. But what are some of the things people can do in the beginning to avoid some of the problems that you solve later on?
Thank you, Karen. Brad is 100% right. The analogy I often use with my clients is that a lawyer is like a plumber. Nobody likes to pay for one, but it's far less expensive to get the plumber involved early rather than later. So from the outset, you want to make sure that your business is set up in the correct way, both for tax purposes, income purposes, and you know, the ultimate purpose of the corporation being to protect your personal assets from liability stemming from your business. So getting the attorney involved earlier is always less expensive. Nobody likes paying attorney's fees. Let's just admit that right out of the gate. But it's penny wise, pound foolish, the expression is. You want to be set up correctly from the outset to avoid the monumental expenses that will follow on later if you've done it incorrectly.
We're talking with attorney Julian McMillan. His website is McMillanLawGroup.com. That's the website. McMillanLawGroup.com, giving practical advice for small business survival. And at the moment, we're talking about laying the groundwork for a successful business, like the business creation. Eventually, we'll get into the business running, and we might even get into the business, I guess it would be dissolution later on. But in the infancy of the business, you mentioned a variety of things here, Brad, that I just kind of wanted to back up to. Purchase documents. I have to assume this is referring to purchasing a business. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, it can be. It can be you're going to take over a franchise. You're going to get into a franchise agreement. You're going to be given a contract, whether it's a Starbucks or a Panera or whatever it might be, a franchise agreement. It'll be several hundred pages of a lot
several
of...
Several hundred pages?
That's right. And it'll be very complicated. It'll be very hard to understand. And, you know, this is a good example of the advice I like to give clients, because I'll look through those agreements. They can rarely be changed because the franchisor or the company has all the power. And I'll explain what the terms are and what you have to do. And then if the client wants to know, you know, what I really think about it, I'll tell them what my experience, you know, 22 years in the legal profession is with dealing with franchise agreements and what can happen and how they can go wrong, because that's really what you want from the lawyer. You want that practical advice.
Yeah, I can see that. And when we talked in the beginning, you kind of said, hey, these franchise agreements, they're almost unchangeable, but it's good to be able to understand 100 pages, a lot of stuff to understand.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, just because it's 100 pages doesn't mean it's 100 useful pages. You know, if you give a lawyer 100 pages, they'll fill 150. That's just the nature of a lot of lawyers, and not necessarily the ones you want to hire as a small business lawyer. The lawyer you want to hire as a small business lawyer is somebody who's going to take 150 pages and turn it into something you can understand readily and easily, so you know what you're getting into. You may still want to do that franchise, and it's not the lawyer's job to talk you out of it or talk you into it. It's just to give you all the information so you can make the best decision.
We have also on here partnership agreement, which I think we can all kind of wrap our minds around, but also financing. You work in the financing world?
Well, I'm not giving loans.
Of course.
You know, I'm not helping people underwrite their loans. What I'm doing is I'm looking at a loan agreement somebody might be entering into. A lot of times in small businesses, you'll end up with people getting investment money from their friends, and they'll say, "Well, I'm going to give this person an interest in my company, and I'm also going to repay it." And then I'll say to them, "Well, is it a loan or are they investing?" They're two different things, and Julian knows this because this is a lot of what he does. But, you know, people have to understand that, you know, you're friends in the beginning and everything's wine and roses, but you still need to document what you're doing, and you have to make sure what you're doing is going to fall correctly in the law, so that later on, whether the business is a great success or perhaps not such great a success, you all still remain friends and everybody knows what they're getting into.
We're talking with Brad Jacobs, attorneybradjacobs.com. That's the website, attorneybradjacobs.com, giving practical advice for small business survival. And I think it's important that I run through this list, and I'm sure there are more, of other aspects of the small business you're involved with, because I think it's a little bit unusual. You have written down here, choosing employees and leasing space. What kind of employee choices do you get involved with?
Well, again, I'm not choosing the employee who's going to, whether it's making a sandwich or making a product. I'm helping these people understand whether they're really hiring somebody as an employee or they're hiring them as an independent contractor, which comes up very, very frequently, because as an employee, you're responsible for paying various taxes, workers' comp benefits, insurance, things like that. As an independent contractor, you're not. But there are several legal tests that define really what's an employee versus an independent contractor. And so I'm helping the employer understand who they're really hiring and if they're properly characterizing this person. And as far as leasing space, you know, people are given these contracts and they're going to lease a space. And the landlords frequently want, even if you have a corporation, even if you've gone to see somebody like Julian and he set you up with a corporation or an LLC or a partnership or something like that, they're going to want a personal guarantee. And what people frequently get themselves into is, oh, fine, I'll sign a 5-year lease. Well, if you sign a 5-year lease with a personal guarantee and your business for some reason doesn't work in the first 6 months, you can potentially be responsible for all the rest of that lease payment all the way through the full term, which can be very, very painful. And the other thing that usually happens with people is that they think that they're going to get an option to extend the lease. And I read the option. The landlord said, at the end of the lease, we'll agree to talk about a new lease, which isn't an option. It's illusory. And I know Julian has some things he'd like to say on this. And I know he's got some experience that far exceeds mine.
Thank you, Brad. Now, what we see very often, and the value add for the attorney at this stage, is that the attorney, hopefully more often than not, will have more experience negotiating leases and therefore understanding what standard and market conditions are for that lease. You know, to expand on what Brad was saying about the guarantee, it's often very common that, you know, yes, a landlord will ask for a guarantee, but the guarantee from the business owner can be set with an expiration date. For example, if Brad used a 5-year lease, we can often negotiate that personal guarantee expires after 9 to 12 months, and then the liability for the lease falls back to the business. These are, you know, again, going back to what Brad had said earlier, this is why it's best to get an attorney involved at the earliest stage possible.
That certainly does make sense. We're talking with Julian McMillan and Brad Jacobs. Who am I typing their website? Attorney Brad Jacobs and McMillan Law Group. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Julian McMillan, and we're going to go through the scenario of what happens when you're in the lawsuit ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Brad Jacobs. He's a civil litigation and small business attorney giving practical advice for small business survival. His website is attorneybradjacobs.com. That's the website, attorneybradjacobs.com. Going to shift gears here to Julian McMillan, civil litigation attorney as well as bankruptcy attorney. Going to talk about what happens when you've laid the best groundwork possible. Is it possible to have legal issues?
Well, Ryan, my understanding is we're talking about, you know, when you haven't laid the best groundwork possible. And this is going back to a comment that was made earlier about why it's so important to get an attorney involved at the outset. The worst client I can possibly have is the fellow who walks in and he's running his own business. Everything's going hunky-dory, money's pouring in, customers are happy, but now he's got an issue with a distributor. He's got an issue with a provider. And wouldn't you know it, that distributor or provider at the outset was a friend of his. And these two guys sat down together in a bar and they drafted out a contract on a cocktail napkin. And now I'm being asked to enforce the terms of that document. Look, I understand. We all want to be friends. We all want to, you know, prepare for the best, but or expect the best, but you have to prepare for the worst. And this is why you want the attorney involved early. It doesn't have to be the Magna Carta. It doesn't have to be a novel. But if you at some point envisage that there is the slightest possibility that you are going to have to rely on a contract to either enforce your rights or at least protect them, then you need to get the attorney involved. So the best way to prevent needing to hire an attorney is actually seeking out an attorney when you think 80% of you is saying, I don't think I need an attorney for this. Because if there's the slightest doubt, then there is no doubt. You want to get somebody who has experience with this and knows what the problems could be and basically steer you around them before it becomes a problem. I mean, you're talking about the difference between a $2,000 expense and a $200,000 expense. Ooh. That's how serious it can be. And the number of times and I'm sure Brad can confirm this, you know, in his experience, where he's got people who come into him and, you know, I use the example of the cocktail napkin contract. I've seen text message contracts that I'm going to be asked to enforce. Brad, do you have any experience with that?
Text message is sometimes far better than what I get. So yeah, you know, Julian's absolutely right. You want to get into the lawyer early and hopefully not often.
There you go. Well, you mentioned the scenario of a distributor. Not all of us are in the business. Why don't you give an example of something that may have not be ironed out on a cocktail napkin that distributor may have slipped in there or not slipped in there, depending on which side of the case you're on.
Well, I mean, I can't really, you know, because of attorney-client privilege, I can't really get into too many details. But I had a case recently where a client of mine, you know, ran a trucking company.
Okay.
And he was under, you know, and I use the air quotation marks here, contract with an international automaker. And his understanding of the deal was that he would be paid on 30 to 60 days. Well, the international auto manufacturer, they pay it 180 days. So all of a sudden, he finds himself in a situation where he's providing services. He needs to, you know, handle payroll. He needs to handle, you know, the
yes.
trucking insurance. Diesel, it's cheap, but not when you're getting 2 miles to the gallon. This sort of thing. So he finds himself 180 days behind. And then, of course, his creditors are coming after him in the interim. So he's both on offense and defense. And I don't really have a written document in that situation that I can, you know, ask a court to enforce. And it's just a disaster for the client. And then, of course, his creditors are talking about pushing him into bankruptcy, not extending him any more credit so he can't buy more diesel fuel. He can't service other customers or clients to pay his own bills. And it's just a disaster. Whereas if he had seen the attorney at the outset and had all the terms, you know, understood, he probably, even if that international auto manufacturer wanted to go out 180 days, he would have known at the outset that he was going to have to secure SBA, Small Business Association, financing for a bridge loan to carry him through to that payday. These are all things that an attorney can help him avoid.
So what do you do in a situation where, you know, cocktail napkin is the contract? I mean, what's the first step in that process?
Well, the first thing you do is you berate the client. You have to start there.
That makes a lot of sense.
Make them feel bad.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. The second thing you need to do is you need to reach out to the creditor and you need to explain the situation in as easily understandable terms as possible. And you need to make it clear to them that, yes, they will at some point get paid. That's the ambition. But here's the situation. And then you need to negotiate terms with that creditor to make sure that they don't cut off the line of credit to your client.
How often, and I'm asking both of you this question, how often are you asked to recommend other professionals to your clients? Because small businesses need insurance people. They need a good investment person. They maybe need a good appraiser for their assets. That, you know, there's all kinds of things that come up. And I'm guessing that one of the things you can do is have them go to professionals that know what they're doing and also avoid problems in that situation, too. Brad?
Well, Karen, you're absolutely right. What you want to try to do is start a circle of trust, and the lawyer can be your center of circle of trust. And you get that lawyer, you develop that circle, and then you rely on people who you trust to move you in the right direction. And you're absolutely right. Through litigation, through business deals, through other clients, you know, I know brokers, I know real estate people, I know title people, I know virtually every type of business individual, from taxes to leasing to construction, that can help these people. And oftentimes I can steer a client to a particular individual. They may or may not like that person. It may not work, but it may be a first step in getting to the right person. And developing that circle of trust is something that's super important for a client to have with a lawyer. And if you don't trust your lawyer, find another one and find him immediately.
And probably true, and I'm not just saying this because I am an accountant, but also that's probably another team player that should be on the field, is an accountant and an attorney. And with those two players on the field, you can find pretty much any professional that you need. Is that true, Julian?
Oh, absolutely. No, Brad's 100% right with this. I mean, a good attorney is essentially like the only gas station in town. So you have to imagine there's an individual who knows everybody. And, you know, when you're running a small business, having an attorney that works well with your CPA, your enrolled agent, your insurance people is absolutely essential. I mean, imagine the scenario where, you know, you're running a small business and all of a sudden you find yourself subject to an IRS audit. Well, your attorney and your CPA both know each other already, so you've got two people already working in concert on your behalf. To change gears a little bit, you have an employee with a slip and fall accident. Well, your attorney is already in touch with your insurance agent, so getting hold of your policy, you know, because you're going to have a fight with your insurance company as well as that employee, you're just cutting so much off the bill right there when that network is already established.
So do both of you have long-term clients that you've had for a long time, and maybe you've seen them grow from, you know, when I started my firm, just me and upstairs in my spare bedroom, all the way to, you know, a big business? Have you seen success stories like that?
Absolutely. And I'm proud to say that I've been part of some of those success stories right here in San Diego. And some of my clients go back 18, 19 years from when I was a very young lawyer. And they took a chance on me. And I guess to a certain extent, perhaps I took a chance on them. And we have developed a great working relationship and friendships. And, you know, they've got contact to me whenever they need it, and I'm available for them. And that's really what you want to try to develop with that lawyer.
Yeah, and while I don't have Brad's tenure here in San Diego, you know, my career began in London, I still service clients who are in Europe and in the Caribbean. But here in San Diego, yes, you know, in the 9 years we've been operating, you know, we've taken people, you know, right out of Chapter 7 bankruptcy, say from 2007, that we still represent. And, you know, one of them that I can think of off the top of my head is now revitalized a U.S. California surf brand from the 1950s. And I speak with him at least once every 2 days. And, you know, that's the sort of relationship as an attorney that you really look forward to having with a client. And going back to a point that was made earlier, I can assure you that, you know, his monthly billings are far less than the person who comes in with that cocktail napkin contract.
We're talking with Julian McMillan. His website is McMillanLawGroup.com. One more time, McMillanLawGroup.com. When we come back, we're going to get more in depth with Brad Jacobs and go through some of the other unique things that his firm is able to help small business with to, well, I guess, survive ahead of us when we come back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Wealth Hour with
Ryan White
and myself, Karen Cassino. We are talking with Bradley Jacobs, who is a civil litigation and small business attorney. can be reached at attorneybradjacobs.com. And so, Brad, we've been talking already about some of the recommendations you have about getting an attorney such as yourself or Julian McMillan on board early on with a small business and some of the things that you can do. But there's so many other things that we haven't talked about. So being a small business owner, I know there's so many things that I've had people help me with. So what are some of the really important things that you can help with a small business owner with, both at the beginning and once they're running their business?
Well, I think one thing that's super important to help a small business owner understand is what to look for when you're actually going to go find an attorney. Now, I like practicing law. I love having clients. I like interacting with people, and I like solving problems. But, you know, there unfortunately in our profession, there are a lot of lawyers who look at an individual and it's just somebody who's going to pay a bill. And if they come in once and they pay their bill and they hate it and they never come again, it's all right because there's 20 people behind them. So, you know, the important thing to learn from a lawyer, and if I had to tell everybody out there one thing to watch out for, it's who you hire. And you got to hire somebody you like. You got to hire somebody who understands you. And you've got to understand what a lawyer does. And we've been talking about how a lawyer can help your business. But you have to come in to that relationship and know the right questions to ask. And one of the primary questions is, you know, what am I looking at? You know, what am I looking at if I've got a problem? What is the problem? And what is it going to cost to fix that problem? Because what happens to a lot of people is they go in, they see a lawyer, and that lawyer says, hey, this isn't a problem. We can handle it. Sign on the bottom line. Give us a few $1,000s as a retainer. And then suddenly, month number one comes along, and you get a bill for $5,000. And you think, well, I can handle that bill. And then next month, another bill. Next month, another bill. And maybe that's unavoidable. And that's one of the things I can talk to clients about, especially if they're going into an area that's pretty complex. You might need a specialist. But you need to understand what that lawyer is going to do. And you have to have somebody that you trust to get the job done. And it may be in a certain situation that the lawyer is going to look at the problem and say, you know what? I could make money defending you in this case. Or I could make money trying to get your money. But at the end of the day, you're going to spend more money than you're going to get. Or you're going to spend more money on me than you'd have to pay to settle this claim right now. And you want a lawyer with enough honesty and integrity who believes in you and believes in your business to give you that hard and truthful advice. I mean, that's the advice I give people, and I do it not only because that's what lawyers are supposed to do. We're supposed to act ethically, but from strictly a business perspective, it's the way you generate business. I want clients who come to me to come back and say, you know what? That was what I expected. There weren't any surprises. I got what I wanted. I got what I paid for. I trusted what you did, and I'm happy. Because those people go out and tell other people they're happy. And we talked about the circle of trust and how we're going to make that happen as a lawyer. And the first step is that lawyer. And once you establish that and you begin to build the people around you, Karen, then you can help these people in business find all sorts of people who they can trust.
Talking with attorney Brad Jacobs. His website is attorneybradjacobs.com. That's the website, attorneybradjacobs.com. And you said many things that I think were very valuable there, but I want to really back up to a couple of them. You mentioned that it is possible that to fight a case would cost more than what you'd get if you won it. And the scenario that you would be able to tell a client that up front sounds amazing to me. Like one of the most refreshing things I've heard in a long time. I have to assume, is that unusual amongst other attorneys?
Well, you know, I'd like to tell you that it's not unusual, but in fact it is, because, you know, you come in to have a case defended, the lawyer's going to charge you by the hour, and they look at the case and they think, boy, I can make X amount of dollars defending this. And unfortunately, a lot of times they don't look at, they don't tell the client, listen, this person wants $20,000. You're going to spend $20,000 defending this. So even if we win, you lose. You know, the only thing that's important to clients when they're looking at litigation is, how much is it going to cost to defend? How much is my exposure going to be if I lose? And what is the time that it's going to take to make those things happen? Because litigation is terrible on a business. Nobody wants to be involved in that. You want to run your business. You want to make your sandwiches, make your product, market your product. You have to deal with employees. Everybody's got family lives. The last thing you need is to be involved in litigation, hear from lawyers, have to fill out papers every day. God forbid, go to court and sit in trial for 2 or 3 weeks. Next to that, a lawyer who's charging you by the hour. Now, Ryan, you're absolutely right. That's the advice you want to get from a lawyer, and you'll get that advice from a lawyer you can trust.
AttorneyBradJacobs.com. That's the website, AttorneyBradJacobs.com. Now I'm going to ask you a math question here. Let's say that I stand to potentially win $100,000, right? That's what I'm going to win.
Let me write this down.
Yeah,
okay, $100,000.
You might need to take your shoes off and count your toes. There's got to be some ratio where in which it's worth hiring an attorney to fight that. Right? So if my attorney is going to cost me 75 to win 100, is that worthwhile? 25? What's the number? And I recognize this is a very subjective question.
No, it's an excellent question, Ryan. The reason it's an excellent question is because that is where the experience of a lawyer comes in. You can go to anybody and say, hey, what are my chances? What you're going to see a lawyer for is their experience, not only what they learned in law school, but what they've learned by acting as a lawyer for the last 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it may be, so that that lawyer can watch the case, not only on the day you come in where the odds might be X or Y as to what's going to happen, but as the case evolves and develops, and to continually monitor it, because I look at cases as being scales. How much is it going to cost to get to the result, and what's going to be on the other side of the scale is the payday to that result. And that constantly has to be evaluated and weighed by the lawyer with all sorts of information and variables that are way too complex to discuss today. But if you have a lawyer you can trust, they're going to do that for you, and they're going to let you know, hey, Ryan, we're at a point now where they're offering $50,000. You've spent 10, your net's 40. I think this is within the range you should consider. You might still want to go forward because you're mad or because you really want to try for that $100,000, and the lawyer will still do what you want, but you want that valuable information to make the right decision.
Isn't it important to advise your client to? I do a lot of divorce work, so it's more important what I'm going to say in that, but I know in all types of litigation, is separating out the emotional connection from the outcome, meaning a lot of people want to go further in a lawsuit because of they're mad, they want to make the person pay, they're not going to let them get the better of them. Talk a little bit about that, because I know that people have to, at some point, you're going to say, if we just look at dollars and we look at the probability of winning, this is what you're looking at, but having them kind of set aside the other issues that in a way don't matter.
Well, that's right, Karen. So what you have is a situation where all a lawyer's ever going to be able to do, we're civil lawyers. Neither Julian nor I are ever going to be able to put anybody in jail. We're civil lawyers. All we can ever really achieve for you is green. We can get you money. And so if you let the emotion get in the way of that, it affects it. Because what you want is a lawyer who's going to tell you, you know what, I know you're upset, but all I'm ever going to be able to do is get you money.
Well, I think you tell them, go out and hit a tennis ball really hard, like I know you can, Mr. Jacobs, to get your aggressions out and not take it out in the system. Well, Julian?
It's funny you mentioned that, Karen, because I actually have a boxing gym in my building. And, you know, when I have those clients come in, I'll give them a free month downstairs at the gym. You know, and what you say is true. Very often you do have a client walk in and they want to declare war. They want a scorched earth type attorney, and that's the approach they want to take to the litigation. But litigation is a marathon. It's not a sprint, and particularly now with the cutbacks from the state in terms of court funding, I file a case today, I'd be lucky to get to trial in 18 months. So you're talking about 18 months worth of legal fees just to have your issue heard. So, you know, what Brad is saying is absolutely 100% correct. That is the attorney you should be looking for. The fellow who's going to tell you right at the outset what you're looking at in terms of cost and advising you, updating you on a weekly to monthly basis as to where you're at, what settlement prospects there are, that sort of thing. Because as attorneys, really, we can only handle the financial aspect of it. The emotional aspect, that's a different professional. And that's all there is really to it. But, you know, in terms of what you should be looking for an attorney, going back to Ryan's example of the $100,000 case, I like to think that legal fees should never be more than 20% of your overall gain.
20%. Okay. So that's your rule of thumb.
That's the rule of thumb.
I don't think rule of thumb is PC anymore, is it?
But also, when you've already gotten involved in the litigation, there is some point in time where you're in the middle of it, and maybe it was worth the 100. If we're using Ryan's example, we're going after 100,000. Now we've already spent 30, and now maybe something went wrong. We found some facts in the case that don't look so good. And at that point, you're in the middle. You've already been through the fight. Maybe it's taking too much of a toll on the business. It's taking too much time. What's the kind of the stopgap? What is the advice you give them at that point? That's, you know, let's cut bait and move on.
Well, this is one of the reasons that you want constant contact with the attorney, such that you're, you know, always in control of the litigation. You, the client, should always be in control. The attorney is just there to basically drive the stagecoach, but you're the one, you know, providing the direction. You're the one running your business, and the attorney won't know what's going on with your business, but he can appreciate, you know, that the cost and the time consumption of the litigation is probably having a negative effect on it. And this is something that will ultimately drive settlement or, you know, prompt you to sort of back away from something that you were initially wholehearted about.
We're talking with attorney Julian McMillan. His website is McMillanLawGroup.com. That's the website, McMillanLawGroup.com, as well as Brad Jacobs, attorneybradjacobs.com. That's the website, attorneybradjacobs.com. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Julian McMillan about, well, if you have a lawsuit on the small business and it's looking like it's going to be expensive, ways of financing the litigation, as well as bankruptcy. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Brad Jacobs. His website is attorneybradjacobs.com. That's the website, attorneybradjacobs.com. We're going to shift gears here and speak with Julian McMillan. He is with McMillan Law Group. And going to talk a little bit about, well, I guess it's going to get into bankruptcy, right? The pros, cons. I mean, it's looked upon as kind of a dirty word, but I suspect you're going to tell me it's not.
Ryan, I'm so glad that you introduced it that way. That's fantastic. Yes, no, bankruptcy has a fantastic stigma to it. What few people realize is that bankruptcy is actually an essential component of any free market economy. The alternative to bankruptcy is what used to be called debtor's jail. People who couldn't pay their debts were sent to prison to make license plates, horse carts, this sort of thing, horse in order carts. To pay off their debts. We in the United States, we rely on entrepreneurs, small business, big business. And you can think of some of the most famous entrepreneurs in this country. Take Donald Trump. Take Richard Branson. Donald Trump wants to build a casino in Las Vegas. So he's going to borrow the money to do this. He's going to take out a $300 million loan. Now, if Donald Trump ever thought that if he defaulted on this loan, he would go to jail, he'd never do it. But because we have bankruptcy, somebody like Donald Trump, I mean, admittedly, he should spend the money on a better hairpiece, but he's going to go ahead and borrow the money. He's going to hire architects, pay contractors, pay city planning fees. Ultimately, he's going to hire hotel staff, buy mattresses, hopefully not from China, slot machines, this sort of thing, hire casino workers. And we have thereby stimulated the economy. But for Donald Trump, if the business venture doesn't work out, yes, he has the ability to pull the plug. Now, for your average consumer or small business owner, it's no different. You know, if you have somebody who's properly incorporated and they started a business, the business took on a bunch of debt, maybe a lease, maybe he rented a couple of trucks, this sort of thing, you know, the long-term exposure is pretty significant. But that business owner can pull the plug, declare bankruptcy, the court will appoint a trustee who will take the assets that remain in the business and sell them for the benefit of creditors. And then the individual is left to survive. Now, in my practice, more of what we do is pre-petition or avoid petition planning is what I call it. So going back to something that's been reiterated very often during this conversation today, your best option is to get the attorney involved as soon as possible. If you're looking at your books and you see that 1 month, 2 months, 3 months down the road, things in the company are going to get tight, that's when it's time to start talking to the attorney. Because you want the attorney to reach out to the creditors while you're still current and say, look, things are about to get a little rough. So I understand what terms we have on our contract, but we need to renegotiate this now before it becomes a problem. You want to avoid the watermelon exploding before it explodes, so to speak. You want, and somebody who actually has contact with, you know, your creditor, your provider, because the worst thing for a business is, say, I mean, it could be as simple as your arrangement with Cox Telecommunications. They shut off your telephones, they shut off your internet because you didn't pay this month. But if they know in advance and they know when the money is eventually going to come, now you can continue to operate the business and do what you're supposed to be doing, which is looking at expanding it and making your business more profitable.
So I think what you're suggesting and proposing is something of a workout program. Now, are you suggesting this happens without actually declaring bankruptcy, or are you suggesting it happens under the umbrella of doing so? Is it the threat of doing so that this occurs, or is it only after doing it?
Well, I'll get to the threat of bankruptcy, okay. But we're talking about, you know, avoiding bankruptcy, because ultimately it's our goal to keep your business alive, to keep your family in the house, to keep, you know, the car in the driveway, this sort of thing, to allow you to continue to prosper as you have, but for some slip up, you know, I mean, you've got a, you know, somebody who owes you money, who they become slow pay. And this has the, you know, to use Ronald Reagan's term, the trickle down effect. If people who owe you money are slow paying, now you're going to be slow paying, and we have to see who gets angry first. But we want to avoid that scenario and head everything off at the pass. Now, coming back to your other point, you know, once it gets, if you come to me too late, right now, yes, we are going to leverage the threat of bankruptcy. We will prepare the petition. We will look at what assets are available. And then we will speak to the creditors and say, look, if you don't back off, if you do not, you know, accept the terms, or if we can't come to terms on some kind of workout deal, this is ultimately what's going to happen. And now you're looking at getting paid 3 cents on the dollar as opposed to 100 cents on the dollar. That's the value that we add. And you know, one of my favorite things about having been a bankruptcy lawyer is taking somebody who 7, 8, 9 years ago went through a Chapter 7, and we want to help all of our clients with the rebuilding process. Because after bankruptcy is done, you know, it's referred to as the fresh start. And the analogy I use often with people is you have to imagine your life as you're walking down a beach on a tropical island. And you're looking in front of you and you see white sand, clear blue water, palm trees, so on and so forth. But you look back over your shoulder and there are dragons and demons and all sorts of beasties. Bankruptcy is you dip your sand in the you dip your toe in the sand, you draw a line, you step over it. And now you look back and all you see is beautiful beach. It is the atomic bomb debt remedy. It's what creditors fear the most. And ironically, most debtors fear it more than creditors, which is the absolute opposite of the way it should be. You know, it was in the Constitution, in Article 1, Section 8. It was there before your right to bear arms. It's not as popular or discussed as often, but it was there. And you have to remember who is creating the stigma in bankruptcy. You're talking about credit card companies or major financial lending institutions. These people can afford to rent Congress or buy Congress. And they get laws passed that say if they set up in South Dakota, they can charge you interest rates up to 30%. Now, under Roman law, any interest rate over 10% was deemed usurious. And if you were found to be charging a usurious interest rate, they would cut your hands off. But because these people can rent Congress and set up in South Dakota, they have the right to charge you these interest rates. And now you're like a gerbil on the spin wheel. You know, the small business owner will use his own personal credit cards to support the business instead of, you know, getting an attorney involved to help him negotiate new terms. So now take a $10,000 debt, you're paying 30% on it. That's going to be way more expensive than just getting the attorney involved at the outset. It's also not going to be damaging to your own personal credit. Because remember, your credit score is in large part based on your income, total and total debt outstanding. So if you're running a small business, have a bad month, put $25,000 on a credit card, which is very quickly going to turn into $50,000, you know, you're really just digging your own grave.
We're talking with attorney Julian McMillan. His website is McMillanLawGroup.com. One more time, McMillanLawGroup.com. And really briefly here, I wanted to make sure that I was clear on this. It sounded to me like there were three different times you might be available to negotiate. One is when it's looking like you're going to run out of money, you know, when there's a couple, 3 months or so before the money's out. One is potentially pre-bankruptcy, and a third is during the bankruptcy. And all these situations, do I have this right? These are all situations for you to negotiate debts.
Those are all three situations where we will negotiate debt. But, you know, the first situation you're talking about is the business owner who has the foresight and willingness to recognize that trouble is coming. Mm-hmm. And that's the ideal client. The second stage is where trouble is here. I'm 1 month, I'm 2 months delinquent on this stuff, and they're threatening to shut me down. And then, of course, we have the...
It's here.
Yeah, it's here. Today's the day. And it really can't be emphasized enough. Get in early, get it done, face the music, and it will be less loud.
Well, you hear it here. Get in early. Julian McMillan. The website is McMillanLawGroup.com. McMillan LawGroup.com. We also heard from Brad Jacobs, his website, Attorney Brad Jacobs. That's the website, AttorneyBradJacobs.com. Gentlemen, and ladies.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Karen. Great fun.
Until next week. There is no doubt.